I'm Ben.
And I'm Zach.
And welcome to the Movie Vault. Today we're flying in with a two-movie feature of Top Gun and Top Gun Maverick. We're a little late to the party, aren't we, Zach?
Yeah. It was like, when did it come out? Like four months ago?
Yeah, like if we wanted to capitalize on the popularity of this movie, we should have done it like 3 or 4 months ago. But we had a good reason for waiting.
It's because we didn't want to go with the hype because we don't do it for the money.
That is true.
Well, we can't.
If we wanted to, we would be doing it for the money, but we choose not to.
I think we have about $25 in our account right now.
Yeah, that's probably about right.
Yeah, which is good.
Right.
But it's over the course of a year and a half, right?
Something like that. So if you do the per episode calculations, not like the highest grossing, not as high grossing as these movies are.
True. Not a billion and 1.47 billion. But no, we had to wait because my dad, Pastor Scott Leewald, is on the podcast today with us.
I am super thrilled to be here. I've been begging for 74 episodes now that I could be on the podcast. My son, who's 11, was on the podcast before I was. And so this is kind of a dream come true.
That's right. Toby was on the Minecraft ethics episode.
Yeah. And that's what we're all about. We're about, you know, giving people their opportunity. This is a make or break moment in a lot of people's career. Mm-hmm. And we're just so thrilled to like elevate people's status through our podcast.
If this takes off, he'll quit his pastorship and join the podcast community.
Wouldn't that be something?
Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay. I didn't know I said that.
But no. So the way we'll do this today is we'll take each movie separate and then we'll combine them at the end. So we'll start with the first movie. Ben, take it away.
All right. So I'm going to do a little synopsis. Pete Maverick Mitchell is an arrogant pilot in the U.S. Navy who backs his way into the Top Gun Academy with Nick Goose Bradshaw. Pete tries to impress his counterparts and instructors with daring flying, but faces the instructor's ire after going below the hard deck, which I think means he flew too low in one of his training exercises. He also tries to impress Charlie, a PhD astrophysicist who he is romantically interested in. After a few volleyball games, Maverick gets into a heated rivalry with Iceman, known for being one of the best pilots out there. He has ice in his veins, and he never makes mistakes. During a flight, Maverick's engines go out, and he has to eject with Goose. He's not a co-pilot, but he's in the plane with... I don't know what they technically called that.
What's it called?
He's like a spotter or kind of the back of the plane looking for enemy people. And then I don't know if he actually shoots.
He had some sort of role in shooting as well. So they both eject, but Goose dies while being ejected. Maverick is distraught and almost quits the academy, but he rejoins for graduation. So he had enough points. He could graduate. He thought about quitting, but he comes back for the graduation.
Ben, let me stop you right there. The fact that you went through the death of Goose and didn't shed a tear, didn't stop and get emotional, just proves to me you don't understand the brilliance of this movie.
Okay, well, we'll get to that maybe. But this is just a brief summary. There was obviously a little bit of tear shed and difficult conversations had in between the decision that Maverick and Goose had. But the group is happens to be the day of graduation, but they're sent to an emergency mission. And they're Iceman and Maverick combined take down, I believe, 5 what they call MiGs, which are basically enemy planes.
Just Russians, right?
Yeah, they're unnamed enemies, but we all know that they're Russian, mm-hmm. probably. Especially since...
It came out in the 80s.
I don't know where the Cold War was at this point, but I think we were still in it. So,
were we?
The USSR hadn't collapsed yet.
You know, I'm going to go with yes. I was 7 years old at the time, so
you weren't following, like, world politics.
No, I was not.
They take it down. Iceman and Maverick are praised as heroes, and then they go off into the sunset together. Together, you know, because there was a lot of tension between...
There was a lot of tension.
No, just kidding.
There are a lot of weird... The wingman line kind of got me at the end.
Yeah, where it's like... You can be my wingman anytime.
that was weird to you? You guys didn't get emotional during that part?
No, not really.
I feel like you guys have severely undervalued just the nostalgia of this movie, and it's so over your heads that, like, I don't think you get it.
Well, I will say we probably did miss the nostalgia of this movie because both of us were born in the 2000s, so and both of us were like 7 or 8 when the Top Gun roller coaster at Kings Island was renamed to Flight Deck, so that was pretty much.
Why is that your reference?
I just wanted to throw that in there.
Really,
there was a Top Gun roller coaster at back when Paramount. It's still there. It's the Bat now.
Oh, they just changed the name.
They just kept changing the name.
It's not as popular, maybe.
Well, no, they didn't have licensing anymore because they sold the park. Paramount sold the park,
so they call it the Bat.
No, it was original. Never mind. We have to go into a whole history of that. But this movie was made with $15 million, which is not a ton, and it grossed $357.3 million.
That's impressive because there were a lot of... How did they get all those planes to do that?
So I'm pretty sure they worked with the Navy on this one.
Oh, yeah. They had to get special permission to get some of these planes, and the Navy really thought about it back and forth for a little bit, but they thought maybe this will be some good publicity we could use. And, you know, there's some stories about how much enlistment went up. It did go up, not as crazy as... some stories
because of this movie.
Because of this movie, more people wanted to be in the Navy.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. You think of the Navy as people on boats, but here we get the Navy. They're cool pilots all of a sudden, so people are thinking about it. I actually looked up. I was curious. Like, do people think that the Navy pilots are better than the Air Force pilots? You wouldn't think.
Oh yeah, they are.
But based on this movie, a lot of people probably had their opinions swayed because they haven't really made a Air Force counter-rival movie to this. I guess it's just cooler when you land your planes on a boat. Planes? No. Planes are stupid. The cars. I hate that movie. So, yeah, it was a stacked cast, too. Tom Cruise, this is, like, right when he's becoming huge. Like, this movie probably kind of launched him into the stratosphere, I would imagine.
So he had one with Risky Business.
Right.
Which is way too old for any of you guys to know. That was like his coming out party. But I think this is about a year and a half, 2 years after that. And this really put him on the map as a, I guess not as a one and done, but like, hey, he's going to be around for
A-lister,
a while.
Yeah. I know that he had another movie this year that I've seen called The Color of Money. But I don't think that was nearly as successful. But he made... playing pool look really cool. So he made Planes and Billiards look awesome in the same year.
Is he most known for Top Gun?
I'm not a movie guy. Thanks for having me on the show. I'm not really a movie buff. I just know a few movies, and I think I still see him as the Mission Impossible guy.
Yeah,
who did Top Guns. But when I think about as many Mission Impossibles as he did, that's kind of the role I see him.
I would say, yeah, Tom Cruise has. He has more established himself as an action movie star than a dramatic movie star. Even though he's been in some pretty good dramatic films, he's more known for his roles in action movies. And this probably started that, really. Because this, while it is not an action movie in the sense that Mission Impossible is, it still centers around planes and fighting, even though there is a significant love story in this movie as well. So it kind of rides the line between a drama and there's a love story, there's a best friend story, there's a rivalry story. So, but we still get all the planes and everything. So, essentially that's the plot. I imagine that when this came out, it was like the thing to do when you were in high school to go see this movie. I want to say, yeah, it was released early in the summer, so it probably ran through most of the summer. And kids, there's nothing to do. They didn't have smartphones.
They ran movies longer back then too.
Probably, yeah. So I imagine this captured the public eye pretty strongly when it came out. And just based off of listening to what other people say about this movie, I don't think that anybody believes this movie is like the greatest like written movie or of all time. But there's just something about.
Some people may,
but like critics don't. But they see the value of the entertainment that's presented by this movie, and there's something about kind of the acting that lifts it for above a normal. And it's definitely the planes. Like at the end of the day, no movie had ever done planes this well.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think we're not comparing yet, but even just quickly comparing the two movies, I think the things that you think about with these. Or the flybys, or you know, I even think of the second one where the plane flies over the building and like the roof comes off a little bit. You know, I remember that part, or no?
Yeah.
But I just think of like parts like those. Those are the parts that I remember from the movie. I don't remember necessarily the dialogue or the. I remember Tom Cruise specifically in Iceman, but most of it has been just the fighting and the planes. And I even think, oh, I'll just wait until the second one. Well, I always say I hate waiting until someone talks.
This one we can though.
This is a little meta, but no, yeah, the second one. Where they have the whole plan and they're like talking about going low and staying up under this certain level, this certain altitude. And I thought like that was really cool to be able to understand the mission like that and understand how kind of how they plan these things. It might not have been accurate, but I thought it was cool.
So now we can get into the meat of the plot. So, so Scott, what do you think this movie is like at the heart of it? What is this movie about?
At the heart of it, it's the movie you want because it gives you everything. I mean, there are so many different categories of this movie. One thing you didn't even talk about, do you know who wanted the... It was a very, very small role. She only had like three lines in it. But do you know who one of the famous actresses in the movie? Married to Goose?
No.
No, who is it?
Are you guys young?
The Queen?
Meg Ryan?
Oh, yeah.
Do you know who Meg Ryan
is? I do know who Meg Ryan is.
I mean,
yeah.
So they just... We'll just throw Meg Ryan, who's a superstar of her own.
Well, explain to those who don't know.
Explain what?
Who Meg Ryan is to those who don't know.
I don't know. She's Sleepless in Seattle. I mean, she's a pretty big person, right?
She was a huge rom-com, especially star. Was she in When Harry Met Sally, or was that someone else?
Yeah, we'll go. Sure, maybe.
She could have been. She very well could have been in that movie.
It's a possibility.
let me just throw this in the 80s. You don't have a lot of movies going on, right? Like, you don't have... little clips of whatever TikToks you do. You don't have social media. There's not much out there other than a VHS that maybe you rent from Blockbuster on Friday nights.
Oh, that's so sad.
But in 1986, my next door neighbor Charlie and his mom took us to the drive-in theater in Taylor, Michigan to see Karate Kid. And Karate Kid was awesome. It was great. But we noticed there was a lot of fanfare at the other screen for a movie called Top Gun. So even though I didn't necessarily like watch it when I was seven, probably shortly after there, a couple years, got into the Top Gun. But I think if you wrap up this movie, there's so many good things about it. Let me start with the music. Can you guys say some of the songs?
That was my number one thing about this movie.
Yeah.
That's what I wrote down.
What was your favorite song?
Danger Zone.
Yeah.
I think I like Take My Breath Away a little bit more.
Really?
Yeah, I just love that. Da-na-na-na-na.
You're so romantic. But like,
no, it's not because of the romance. I just like the song.
I'm single.
Well, Danger Zone, you can't listen to that without getting some goosebumps, right? Like, you're ready to go fly a plane or like just do something. Like, doesn't that get you pumped up?
It is the perfect song for the situation.
I used to listen to the song before I knew it was associated with Top Gun. I would listen to it when I ran.
So, how about You Never Close Your Eyes Anymore?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it was good.
That was a good one.
It was good.
It was great.
And then, great.
And then, of course, well, yeah, his pickup line when he was singing, was that when he was singing with the whole crowd of people at the bar?
You've lost trying that love to pick feeling. Up.
Yeah, that one. Okay, that's a different song. Yep. But I like that part. It was definitely maybe felt a little aged in the tactic. I was like, I felt kind of uncomfortable for the girl where there was like 20 guys around her all singing this song. I was like, I don't know if this is aged well, but it was cool. And it was cool. It was cool when they played it at the end. They called back to the start and she re-entered his life kind of at the end of the movie by playing it on the Jackbox.
Yeah.
So the music, like, not only was it good, but it established the cues in the movie.
Yep.
When Danger Zone played, you knew it's time for an action sequence. When Take My Breath Away played, you know, okay, it's going to be about romance. And then, of course, Not Loving Feeling signified a couple things. And then, of course, we have Great Balls of Fire.
Goodness gracious.
Which is more, maybe even more important for the connecting one film to the other film.
True.
Because of how they do it.
That's very true.
Because I don't think you would have necessarily... That scene now holds greater weight than it did now that the second movie's come out, I think. The scene where Goose is playing the piano.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. Have you guys seen any different sunglasses this past summer than you've seen in years past?
Oh, yeah.
And they would be?
The aviators?
Aviators.
Yeah, aviators. Yeah.
I mean, you see them here or there, but probably in 1986, 87, everybody had an aviator pair of sunglasses. Zach, your grandfather had a pair of aviators.
Which one?
Gary.
Oh, really?
Yeah, in 1987. I didn't know what they were until later on. I also got a pair of aviators this after past watching summer, it. After watching Maverick.
Yeah, it probably brought him back, honestly. Like this summer, and then well, because think about it, they're called aviators. Like I always knew they were called aviators, but I never really thought about the association to actual pilots. Like and now I like you. It kind of establishes it more as like they were popularized because people thought pilots were cool.
No.
So.
And what about the name? So like. I know you guys have heard Maverick and Iceman before this past year, I would assume.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Maybe not understanding the full reference to what they were, but you're talking 35 years later, those names are still around. Still people call themselves Maverick or Iceman.
Or Ice in My Veins.
Ice in My Veins.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Oh, yeah. I do realize now that people do say that.
Yeah.
Like in songs.
Right, or even Young Lean's song Iceman, Swedish rapper Young Lean. So that's how many years after Top Gun came out?
It's really influential.
Yeah, that's totally why he named that song. No, I'm just kidding, I have no idea.
No, that's true. I think I've heard Iceman and Maverick a lot. And what was the line that you always say about Ghost Rider?
About Ghost Rider?
Isn't it negative Ghost Rider something? Isn't that from this movie or no?
Because
he says Ghost Rider, that's no in this movie.
That's a negative Ghost Rider.
Yeah, that's what he used to say.
I'm not sure where that came from.
Yeah, but that's what I thought that it came from this movie because he says like or like a not affirmative. What's the opposite of an affirmative?
I don't know.
I forget what it is. But a non-affirmative to a guy named Ghost Rider with the call sign. So I'm assuming that's where you got it from.
No.
Really?
I don't know. I mean, we could Google it. Okay. All right, I'm going to close out my bit here. But when I look at this movie, I think about how the action, like the plane scenes, you've never seen that before. You had the action going on. You had the romance, which, you know, me and Zach maybe aren't as much into the romance as Ben and the music that goes into the romance setting there, but no?
Well, the music I agree with. The romance bit I thought was like an improvement on the new film that they de-emphasized romance in this movie.
Yeah.
So, because It's basically, I mean, I can get into my issues with the movie at a later point, but it's kind of one of my annoyances with the movie as well, even though I do like the music, yes.
But it had the cool factor, right?
So you right, it
the
did.
The songs, the glasses, the jacket, all the cool factor. Had some patriotism in it.
Right.
Right? USA. I mean, you got to get kind of excited about that. Had some drama with the death of Goose.
Mm-hmm.
So overall, I'm saying it's one of the greatest movies of all time if you're in your 40s.
Okay. That's an interesting. I would love to poll some 40-year-olds to see like what the collective feeling is. But it is in the National Film Registry, which means that the US government believes that this movie is important to film.
Of course.
So that's gonna be films like The Princess Bride and some other films from the 80s.
I found it. So this is the line. The air boss says negative Ghost Rider, the pattern is full.
Oh, okay. So I've told you that lots of times growing up. That's a negative Ghost Rider.
That's why
I don't know where it came from.
I think it's this.
So even subconsciously, it was influencing.
It was
you.
There.
Yeah.
That's kind of weird that I noticed that though.
Right. That's a subtle thing.
Yeah. I don't.
That's a subtle thing.
I think they were even talking, having a conversation. The guy says it in the background. I was like, oh. But no. I agree. I think it has something for everyone. I don't think many people would hate this unless they're in another unit of the military that hates the Navy.
Or you're like a huge film snob and you just don't like action movies, which I don't think that's really fair to like categorize those people as not liking the film because they wouldn't like it any way it was written. So you can kind of just ignore those people.
Yeah, I don't know if this is winning any Academy Awards. It didn't win necessarily anything at first.
No,
right?
This is not a movie designed to win an Academy Award, though.
But when you look at a 40-year-old man, maybe that 40 to 50-year-old person.
Well, you're 43, right?
43. So I was a little young when it came out. I'm telling you, this has got to be on people's top 10 list of anybody in that age range because it gives you everything that you want.
Right.
We don't have any movies in our day that we would cling to for decades.
Oh, you would cling to Cars, wouldn't you?
I mean, I would, but...
Yeah, maybe like Pixar movies.
I wouldn't memorize all these lines and stuff. Even though I probably have because it was in the car all those years.
You could watch that 3 times a day.
That's true. I had a Cars TV.
Man. Yeah, that would... You're right. Those would probably be... It was just... It's just a different era, though. Yeah. Of like... I am kind of jealous in some ways of the era that the 70s and 80s brought, really after Jaws, because Jaws is like always referenced as the first blockbuster movie, but this is like a true summer blockbuster. It is an original concept, which we don't get a lot of these days, and it got all of the hype. Like, all of the hype was behind it. You got to see rising stars through this, and it wasn't, and director, although I don't know that, I forget who even directed this, because I don't know that he was like super well known. Tony Scott. Days of Thunder, which is another Tom Cruise movie, and True Romance. So like, he's well known enough, but this was, I'm sure, the height of his career, basically. But like, stars and the way that Hollywood functions, while I feel like has become more and more commercialized and more based on franchises like Mission Impossible or something like that, or Marvel is the huge one, of course. And so now stars get introduced through being in those franchises as opposed to being coming up in these like movies that are their own concept, their own world, and you get to see it that way.
Yeah, back when it was harder to make movies in the 80s and 90s, and you couldn't just say, hey, this is a Marvel movie, let's make $500 million off it, whether it's good or not.
They had to work a little bit to get these successful concepts, whereas now it's like they can just churn out the same concept over and over again, and people will go see it.
Which, I mean, eventually we'll get to the second movie, but that's... Listen, when they said Maverick's coming out, Top Gun 2, everybody in their 40s was buying tickets and didn't care whether it's a good movie or not. Like,
right.
They wanted that feel back. But
right. And yeah, we'll get to that, because I think there's a lot of things to learn from Top Gun Maverick that should be considered for when other movies come out. So now do you want to talk about some of the like flaws with the movie that we thought, which I don't know how many you have, but yeah. I have a couple. Do you have any other thoughts before we move to that?
No, I don't know. I think we covered, I think Dad had a good list of things to cover. But I think for me, the part that it was just older, you know, and that's not a bad thing. I just think I need to figure out ways to relate to it. You know what I mean?
Right.
So like, I have to like connect to a time where I wasn't there. And we had the same problem with Planes, Trains, and Automobiles with your dad, where like, we don't have those insights, or even Star Wars. I think of like, I would have had a different image of Star Wars if I had seen it that opening night. But yeah. I think with this, maybe some of the acting wasn't the best, just like realistically. And I don't think it needed to be, but I don't think it was amazing. I think Val Kilmer was fine, but I think Val Kilmer got better as his career went on after this. And then, the girl was good. I forget her name.
Kelly McGillis. Yeah, or her name's
good.
Yeah,
Tom Cruise, I do think he was good. I think he was fine.
He's charismatic.
Yeah, I think
he's perfect for this.
I think he can hold every scene that he's in. Maybe just some of the other generals and commanders and stuff just were flat, but I mean, they're supposed to be.
Yeah, like they're just yelling. They're not. I mean, maybe it's just how they're supposed to be, but there's no like nuance in their personality.
Yeah,
it's
and
just
that's
like
fine. I don't think that like back then people felt the need to put nuance into side characters like they do now.
Yeah. You
know? So
yeah.
I think that's fine.
It's a different world.
It's definitely an 80s movie with 80s acting.
Yeah.
80s acting, like, people would have said like, oh, that's great, but what we like these days is like, we like to have everyone has a dark side up to them, you know,
everybody, right.
We have
there's
to
anti-heroes
for them to be realistic, you know,
right? Yeah,
but sometimes it's good to just have a good, you know, guy who's doing the right thing in a movie. Like, that's why I like Captain America so much, because his flaws are that he just doesn't understand the world that he's in, rather than him being like a narcissist like Tony Stark, you know. So
right. So one of the significant flaws in this movie might be a little bit controversial. I understand the importance of why they did it. I even understand, but I didn't really like how Goose's death was handled. It's extremely integral to the plot, but if you think about it, it's just odd that they chose this direction.
Like, it was quick.
Yeah, it was too, it happened too fast. You're like, you meet this guy's family, then there's a freak accident, and they're like, oh, he's dead. You're like, well, Tom Cruise lives, somehow this guy died. I get it, like, plane accidents, of course, there's so many variables. Of course, one person could live, one person could die. But everyone was just saying that, like, oh, Maverick, you just need to get over this. This is like, why are you even thinking about not going to top? You're like, nobody else seems sad.
He goes
sad.
To the bathroom right on that day, like, and he's like, you need to get over it.
Like, yeah, I'm serious. Like, I didn't really think, like, it happened so quickly. I'm like, did they really need to have this in the movie? Like,
it's in the past. It was yesterday.
Yes, they did, because it, No, actually, I don't think they really needed Goose to die.
Oh, no, you have to have Goose die.
It's like they were writing and they're like, well, in every movie, you have to move the arc in this direction. There has to be something dramatic that happens that causes the character to rethink their actions. And then they have to overcome that and finish the movie. But like
something else could have been in the way.
Yeah.
Something else could have happened.
I think they could have played more into the rivalry between Iceman and Maverick in terms of that thing.
True.
I think it works because of how the second movie turned out.
Exactly.
We can be thankful they made this decision to have Goose die. But in the movie, it wasn't my favorite.
But I will say, I think having Goose be such a good support for Maverick throughout the entire movie, and then him dying adds more weight, because he was a great friend the entire time, supportive. Maverick would screw him over. He would so many times throughout the movie, and then Goose would come back and like be like, "It's okay, man, you got it," and just be his wingman, you know?
Yeah.
And, like all these areas, and then I think just kind of like I think the reparations between Iceman and Maverick at the end, where he says, "You can be my wingman," even though I thought it was cheesy, I think it was a good moral, because it was almost like, you know, he lost his wingman, and then the guy that he hated at the beginning of the movie wants to be his wingman, or his wingman. He wants, you know what I mean. And then it's just kind of like, so that was good. But I think, so I disagree with you, Ben, in that I think Goose needed to die.
Yeah, I think I can agree with you there.
They should have introduced his family earlier. And I think that they should have given more time to breathe, maybe have a funeral or something.
Yeah, it was just so quick.
Both of you guys, listen, film costs a lot in the 1980s, right? We don't have 3-hour films. You got 90 minutes to get this in, and they didn't want to spend that much time on it. But one, you got to feel what it's like losing a friend, man, how difficult that must be.
No, that's where I disagree with you. I don't think this is what I would feel like if I lost a friend. Feel like I got the weight of the death. It felt like everyone moved on way too fast.
If I died and someone told you to move on, we'd be like, all right.
I don't know. It's the army, so I suppose it's a different world. The line that really bugged me was when, I forget what the commander's name is, but he comes up to Tom Cruise and is like, "We just fly, this happens, deal with it."
People die.
Right, people die. But people die, but they die in combat, or they die in...
This is training.
This is training. People, I'm going to say, most people don't die in training. I guarantee that. Like, I mean... It happens, but it's extremely rare, which would make it heavier that his death happened in training, because it would be so odd.
See, I'm still looking at this. You guys went into this movie. You didn't feel the movie. You watched it just so you could talk about it, but you didn't feel the emotions. You didn't feel it. So when you started off this conversation and said, "I didn't feel it when he said, I'll be your wingman anytime." Like, someone says that to me, I'm being moved by like tears. Like, you'll be my wingman. Like, you're there with me. You love me. Like, that's how men say I love you without saying I love you. I'll be your wingman.
No, I think I got that. It was just, I don't know. Maybe I am looking at it through different eyes.
Are you guys millennials?
Gen Z.
Even worse.
How do you not know that I'm a Gen Z?
Our generation the hardest generation to please of all time.
No, we are. We're very high maintenance.
We gave you awards for everything.
That's true.
Yeah.
You remember your basketball team, your senior year?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was your record?
I don't know. We probably won like 8 games.
I schooled,
but you got awards.
Yeah.
Yeah. You went to the championship for in Mount Vernon and probably lost all 3 games. We're like third place runner up. Congratulations.
No. We won our first game. I'll stand by that. We came back. I led the team back. We
You were
won.
The leading scorer that year.
Yeah. Well, and we won that game. We almost won our second game. I just have to defend my honor here.
Yeah.
But I did blow a layup at the end of the game, so that did happen.
But you lost your next two, right?
We lost our next two,
and we gave you a third place trophy for winning 1 out of 3 games. We as parents have messed you up with all these trophies and ribbons and congratulations.
I suppose it's your fault. Yeah. I mean, they should have taken away my team MVP award for blowing that layup at the end of the game.
Someone's got to get it.
That's true. I guess you're right.
Then you should have had it. It's fine.
And but that reminds me, as parenting, we always should apologize to our first kid, because that's how we learned to parent.
I mean, look at how this kid turned out.
Well, I mean, we learned how to parent because of him. Sure. What to do, what not to do.
The trial run.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. But yeah, so I think that pretty much sums up the first movie. We can see the generational gap in opinion and the different angles that Gen Z and Gen X, right? You're in Generation X.
I think so.
Yeah, because mom's a millennial though.
Yeah, the millennial's the hipster generation.
Mom's not a hipster.
Ours, the TikTok generation, and then I don't know what Gen X is.
So I know your traditional rating is like the 3 different things you say. Can I get you guys to give me a 1 out of 10 of what you'd give this first movie?
1 to 10 rating?
Yeah.
10 being great.
I actually think it's a 7.5.
7.5.
Maybe 8.
I'll give it a 6.5.
6.5 is fair.
You have to consider the movies that I'm comparing it to, though.
Ben.
I think 7.5 is fair for me. I actually really enjoyed it.
And maybe I see this as a 1986 movie. Like, if you're comparing it to movies that come out today, I get it.
No, I'm comparing it to other movies that came out in the 80s. This is not... Well, or earlier than that. Like, but you have to understand that this is not going to be a movie that I am necessarily attracted to. Like, it's not... It wouldn't be my first... So if you brought me any movie that was like this movie, I wouldn't necessarily rate those movies higher than this one.
That breaks my heart. I can't believe you guys gave anything below a 9.
I also saw that Zach gave this a 3 out of 5 on Letterboxd. So
what did I do?
You gave this a 3 out of 5 on Letterboxd.
Which is a 60%?
60%.
That would technically be a 6 out of 10.
Yeah. So he changed it because you're here.
No, I mean, maybe it's because he's here, but I think talking about it probably raised it up.
It raised your...
This is a generational movie that you guys have undervalued, and it breaks my heart.
Well, that's what we predicted before we did
that. I'll say that the movie that my dad picked, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, is actually one of my favorite movies, and it was from the 80s. So,
you think that's better than this one?
I prefer it to this movie. Oh, I don't think... Nah, you can't even compare them because they're not even the same type of movie.
Right, you're right.
But I would personally prefer it.
I think
if I
remembered everything that happened in that movie, then I would try to rate it. I can't remember what happened in that movie.
No, you have to watch it. You have to watch every Thanksgiving, though. It's a Thanksgiving movie.
Maybe.
I'm kidding, though. I understand the appeal. I feel like maybe I can redeem myself when I talk about Top Gun Maverick.
Okay.
So let's
get into that.
Let's get into the ad, and then we'll get into Top Gun Maverick.
Oh, yeah, let's transition into the ad right now, right, Ben?
Let's do it. We're going to talk about the ad right now, okay. Just so you know. 3, 2, 1.
Go.
So what does everybody need? What do planes need? What is...
Fuel.
Do they need food, sustenance? Yeah, of course. Okay. Maslow's hierarchy. The first hierarchy is going to be your essentials. For a plane, that would be gas. That would be oil changes.
No, and then it would be what? What's the second one?
I don't know what the second tier is, but I know what's in the second tier.
What?
Insurance.
No, insurance is in the first tier.
Are you sure? Is it in the first tier?
Insurance needs to be in the first
because
tier.
Because everything that is insured,
Ben,
is a secondary need.
I'm telling you it's in the first tier.
Okay.
Because we want them to get it.
It is in the first tier. So right up there with your eating and your drinking and making sure that your body is able to function is insurance. Because if you don't have a car, what's the point of living? And if your car's not insured and you total it, then you might as well not be starving. And
that's true. Good thing
be
I
dehydrated.
Have insurance on mine.
So we're gonna have you call Hedman Anglin Agency. They're good at coming up with good prices for you. The current insurance you have is probably more expensive than theirs. And the only way to find out is to call them at their number. 614-486-7300. That's 614-486-7300. And we've had Jonathan on the podcast probably about 6 months ago.
What was that for?
That was for Groundhog Day, another 80s movie.
Yeah. Which that one was really good, too.
That's a really good movie.
Yeah.
I also am insured through them with my car, and we have saved money. All of my family has switched over to them.
How much money have you saved?
I couldn't give you an amount,
next podcast.
Next podcast, maybe I can come up with an exact amount of money that we're saving.
Because it's probably
by
a lot,
insuring through
and
them.
That would
It's one of those things, I feel like most people would switch, they just don't take the time and they don't realize their current insurance isn't the best deal they could have.
Bitcoin incentive,
right?
That's
yeah,
the only way you get.
Also, if you switch over and you tell us, we'll give you a cardboard cutout of Zach and I. We've been offering that for a while.
We'll be in our scrubs,
yeah,
in the cutout,
yeah.
Okay, that's the ad there. We're done with the ad. Just
we're done with the ad. We can move on to Top Gun Maverick.
The joke is I hate Ben's transitions. He says, okay, we're going to talk about this.
And every time that when he points it out, it makes me accidentally do it more.
I know, we're just spiraling.
Yeah, it's crashing and burning.
Every podcast we talk about it more.
I honestly might switch my insurance just to get the cardboard cut out.
Nobody's done it yet.
Yeah.
So you'd be the first.
I'll hook you up. I can hook you up more directly with
but,
them.
All right, so Top Gun 2, Maverick, right? This is my synopsis, okay? Andrew Neiman flies planes with Ethan Hunt against his mom's wishes and fails to live up to his father's legacy.
Did you say Ethan Hunt?
Yes.
Wait, so Ethan Hunt is from Mission Impossible?
It's
and then Cruise. Andrew Neiman, have you ever seen Whiplash?
No, I've seen like 5 movies in the past 10 years.
Dang. Whiplash is a classic.
It's a movie with Miles Teller.
We actually did it on the podcast not too long ago. Although it's about an abusive drum instructor and his student.
Drum?
Yeah, like jazz drum. Jazz drumming cool.
They made a movie. Okay.
It's actually really, really good. It's J.K. Simmons and Miles Teller. But you wouldn't like it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, but I loved it. It was great. But no, it was, Andrew Neiman flies planes with Ethan Hunt against his mom's wishes and fails to live up to his father's legacy.
That's a pretty good summary. It took me a whole paragraph. Zach did it in like one sentence.
I just thought of this the other day, and I was like, Ben, come up with a synopsis for the first one. Then he came up with that elegant one, and I just have my jokey one. But no, it was great. I think we're talking about generations right here. We have my generation and my father's generation. And I think with this movie, that's a theme too. Just of Miles Teller. And going into this, I had seen the trailers for this movie. I didn't realize that it was his son in the trailer. Now, until I got into the movie and I was like, wait, that's the same mustache. I was like, it's probably his son. So that's how I connected the dots. And then he obviously started playing the piano, that song. And then I realized it was him. But no, I think it worked on most levels for me. I think it worked on a lot of levels. And Ben, I think this is what you were alluding to earlier. I think this is a good way to make a sequel.
Yes. So. This is, in many ways, should be, and I hope they don't take this too literally, but this is the prototype of how you should make a legacy sequel. Because, like, it's become a thing now to either reboot franchises that are from the 80s and 90s or do this where you're, like, making a sequel to it and you're using one of the main characters from it who's older now, and then you're introducing a new character to carry on the legacy. They did it right. I was actually shocked when this movie came out and people were giving it like amazing reviews. Like, this movie got so well reviewed, and the reason for that is because the first trailer I saw for this was probably like 3 years ago, because they delayed this movie so much, and I kind of thought it looked like the most boring movie of all time in the trailer. This was probably a teaser trailer. There's probably like, they were probably only like flying one plane, and I had never seen the original Top Gun, so I had nothing to compare it to. And I was probably just like, this is gonna be dumb. Like, why are they doing this? Like, because there's been so many, like, Jurassic World has kind of crashed and burned. Like, so many of these, like, reboots have just not worked out. See this, like, be so successful was not something that I saw coming.
Well, let's list some of the terrible sequels that have come out. Star Wars.
What? Okay, I kind of like those, but...
Ben's a contrarian, but he likes the newest Star Wars.
Not the 9th one, but 7 and 8 I can get behind.
Like, okay, well, let's... Just qualitatively, those are bad. And then
a lot of people didn't like
them. Obviously, Jurassic Park. Is Minions good?
Yes.
Minions.
That's one of the movies I've seen, and I love Minions.
Minions doesn't really count though, because I'm talking about older movies that are rebooted.
I'm just joking.
I guess like Batman got better over time.
Yeah.
Since the 80s, okay. So there's that.
What other sequels are there that are specifically?
I know there's more. I just
like Blade Runner. That was a good one.
Oh yeah, that was a really good one. That's another way to make a really good.
But I'm just going to look up 80s with superhero movies too, but I feel like you can't count those because there's a lot of crossover with those.
Okay, so here's 80s remakes on IMDb. Here's somebody who made a list. Let's see one of the initial ones, 21 Jump Street. I forgot that was a TV show. So that was a pretty good movie. Karate Kid got rebooted. I don't think that was very good.
Was that the early 2000s reboot?
Yeah, that was the early 2000s reboot.
And now they have a show.
Yeah, which that might have been a little bit more successful. Obviously, the horror movies got rebooted. True. Like Nightmare on Halloween. Guarantee those ones aren't as good.
I hear the Halloweens aren't terrible.
Probably not, no. But Evil Dead got rebooted. Yeah, like every horror movie, of course, gets rebooted.
They could probably do those every decade, though.
What, Scarface got rebooted? There's no way. If it did, it was like a direct-to-TV thing. So maybe there's not as many as I'm imagining, but it's going to continue having... I mean, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles is supposedly getting a reboot with Will Smith and Kevin Hart. How's that going
to... Really?
Yeah, actually.
That's going to be a way...
Obviously, now that Will Smith is in some hot water, I don't know what that did to the project, but...
It's fine. Just let it...
Hopefully they keep remaking it. But this, if you're going to say like a good franchise restarter, this is it.
Restarter?
Not restarter, continuation.
Or do you think this is the end, though?
I don't know. We can talk about that.
If like, made $1.3 billion, I don't think it's the end.
If we know anything about Hollywood, if there's a number associated with it, they're going to make more.
What's Top Gun Goose?
Yeah, maybe. Something. Probably not. That's a, kind of a dumb name.
Or not Top Gun Goose, Top Gun Rooster?
Yeah, maybe.
Right? Because he could do more. He could have kids.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this has done wonders for Miles Teller's career. I guarantee that.
And Miles Teller has had quite a career already.
Right.
I think he's had a good career. Like, I think he's an up.
He's had a good career, but this definitely made him more of a... I mean, I would have never imagined after watching Whiplash that Miles Teller would be a guy who had sex appeal.
Yeah. Like,
and after this movie, he does.
Yeah. True.
Which is not, like, that's completely not expected at all.
True. He's like a wimp in that movie.
Because he's like a nerdy pushover.
Yeah.
He was in Fantastic Four, but nobody liked that movie, so.
True. But that could have been a good one. That's another reboot that failed.
Right. So. Yeah.
So maybe he was weary of that. He waited 10 years, did this.
Okay. So maybe we should get into why does this... Do you think this movie works better than the original Top Gun, or is it just a good continuation?
So once again, we're going to be different generations. When did you guys see this movie?
I saw it this summer.
2 days ago.
Okay. Opening weekend, right? So when you're in your 40s, you've been waiting for this movie to come out. Like, well, as soon as they said it's coming out, like, I'm getting tickets opening weekend. I want to see it. You guys did not have the feel, the emotions, and everything that went into 1986. And so what this movie did for me, it gave me everything I experienced in 1986, right? I love the movie from 86. Comes out this year, and it gave me every single thing I wanted to see. I want to see Tom Cruise. I want to see the jets. I want to see... the action, a little bit of the drama, you know, a little bit of the romance, and you know, the music, the volleyball scene that was in both movies. See, all these things they gave me, and then they gave me something I didn't know I wanted.
What?
But a lot has changed from the 80s to 2022.
What did you not know you wanted?
I didn't know I wanted a little bit of humor.
Oh yeah.
Is this one funnier?
There was no humor in the first one, really.
True. That's true.
And this one understood that Tom Cruise is quite a bit older. He didn't understand everything that the younger kids were doing. And I thought Tom Cruise allowed himself to look stupid for the sake of humor. And it gave me everything I wanted, plus a little bit of humor.
That's because the 40-year-olds that are watching this movie can relate to that.
Yes!
That's exactly why. Because they are the Tom Cruise in this movie, watching these kids do these things.
And I think you hit the nail on the head there as to why this movie works. It understands itself. It understands its goal, and I think it actually improves upon some of the flaws that I saw in the first movie as far as like the plot of the movie, and it focuses more on the part of the movie that people actually liked, which is they love the flying, they love the banter between the students, so they tone down the love story. It's still there. There's still a love story. Yeah. And honestly, it's a more... Since they're coming from two different places, one's a younger love story. This one's more of a more mature. They're older. They've seen more life. And so you get a different angle at the love story. But it's an appropriate part of the movie as opposed to taking too much of the... Like, basically, a good chunk of the first part of Top Gun is... Like, they ignore the flight school, they ignore everything to do the love story, and then they come back to it. Whereas this one, it's more intermixed in between.
We want to see planes flying, doing certain maneuvers.
Right.
And I don't want to give a... Zach, read the last line of my notes. This is what I feel.
Greatest sequel of all time.
I think that it...
It's up there for me.
It's definitely up there. Most sequels, as you said, are awful.
Yeah.
So there's not a lot of good sequels to go from.
Did you like Monsters University?
No. That, really? I'm going to say that's
not
a good...
prequel, technically.
I'm going to say that... Well, I liked it, but it's not better than the original.
Incredibles 2?
Not better.
Than the original, yeah.
Blade Runner 2049.
Might have been better than
the original. But that, like, again...
Oh, Empire Strikes Back.
That's a good sequel.
Back to the Future 2?
Yeah.
Not better than the original. No, it's good. It's good.
Not better than the original Back to the Future?
But there aren't many sequels that are better than the original, you're saying.
No. Yeah.
But
it's
would
rare.
You guys consider Avengers 2, even though they did like a bunch of movies in between that?
Avengers is still better.
Avengers Infinity War, I would say is better.
The first two.
So if you consider that a sequel, I would consider it better.
I would go
than
Infinity
the original.
War and Infinity War. Infinity War, Endgame, Avengers, Age of Ultron.
Yeah, that's what I would go.
There's that.
But I think there's
two more.
I think there's a different reason. Like, it's hard because there's so many films that go into the Avengers films, really.
That's different.
That it's different. That's not really in the
different
same category.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I'm trying to think of, I know there's probably another movie I can think of that's a really good sequel, but I'm willing to say that this is definitely in the conversation, if not the best sequel.
Wow. See, I didn't think you guys would be as big after hearing your comments from the original.
Well, it's because we think that this improved on a few of the flaws.
Like, that's the thing. It's like, if the original is already the best movie, that nothing will ever live up to it. But I... because I didn't have the highest opinion of Top Gun. And again, there was a couple things I did wrong. I watched the sequel first. That's never a good idea. But yeah, it happened because of, like, I had never seen Top Gun and I didn't really want to, like, hold off on watching the new movie because it was so popular. I did see this movie in theaters twice, which is pretty rare these days to do that. Some people saw it 3, 4, or 5 times, so that it had that much of a... What about God's Not Dead 2? Is that better than God's Not Dead?
I haven't seen either.
I haven't seen it. I just know that God's Not Dead was not good.
So a lot of the stuff, Paddington 2, I heard was better than the first.
Yes, that one got really good reviews.
Oh, Toy Story.
Toy Story.
I think the 3
and
are
2
better.
Are both. And
Toy Story 2 is, which one is that one?
That's the one where they go to the Prospector and then the Al's Toy Barn. But the third one's the best in my opinion.
The third one's the best.
Yeah.
What's Toy Story 3?
The third one is where they are getting burned and Lotso's there. And they go to the sunny side.
Okay.
Saw 2 is not better than Saw.
What about Lord of the Rings?
I think the second and third one are better than
John
the first.
John Wick?
I haven't seen them.
So you said
Kill Bill Volume 2?
Yeah, that's good. Planet of the Apes increases.
Although you could argue that Kill Bill, it's the same movie.
Shrek gets better as it goes on.
Again, haven't seen the second one, so
those aren't like movies like this where the original movie was a one-off. These were planned sequels.
Yeah, different when it's like a planned sequel.
Or when
I think
based off a book or a series.
Right, because Lord of the Rings almost doesn't seem fair because like they knew that there were going to be three. Like, and so you knew you were going to have a sequel. It's not like this where it's
Lord
like...
Lord of the Rings, they did not have the task of reapproaching old familiar territory. What they had was a story that continued because the first one was not concluded, whereas this one was concluded in the first one.
Right. I haven't seen Aliens, but I've heard people like Aliens and Alien pretty well.
So I guess it could be, his statement could be true, whereas compared to the first one, the quality is still there.
Did you guys not get a little emotional when you saw Val Kilmer stand up as Iceman?
Yeah.
I didn't know he had throat cancer.
Yeah, I think once you know that he actually has throat cancer, that's definitely a sad scene. And he does like the talking, which I think would be painful if you have throat cancer. So it was obviously took a lot of effort. And I think it was handled very well. Like they were very respectful to him and they thought it was important to include him. And they integrated texting into a movie and it wasn't cringy.
That's true.
Did you notice that?
Yes.
Like when he's texting Iceman, you don't get it at first if you didn't realize that Val Kilmer had.
Well, I was wondering, I was like, are they actually going to, is Val Kilmer not in this movie? Because he's only texting him. He's not. I was like, is he not going to show up at all? Is it just going to be a phone call or something, you know?
Yeah. Because more often than not, when they try to incorporate like technology like that into movies, hasn't really worked.
Was this a big time producer that put this out?
I would think so.
Is it a different director?
Different director. I would have to look up who specifically. I think it was the same production company. I remember the logo being in the other one. Here, Top Gun
Maverick.
Wasn't
it Paramount?
Yeah, I think Paramount owns this.
Mm-hmm.
Paramount Pictures. It's the Don Simpson, Jerry Bruckheimer were involved in both, but I don't know whether the name being in this movie was more of a like. We're giving them... I don't know how involved
like
they
credit
were.
From the first
it
one.
It could have been credit from the first one.
Someone was there to make sure it stayed. Had the same feel.
What?
Someone was involved
in the
first
one. I think Cruz was very involved in it.
I mean, I'd have to assume it was him and the other actors.
Yeah. It's directed by Joseph Kosinski. I don't think that he... I think this is basically his breakout. Oh, he was Tron Legacy. So... he was also involved in a sequel that was made well after the first one that got done well, from what I understand.
Tron Legacy was pretty good.
Yeah. So
we did the original Tron on the podcast. That was like, it wasn't hard to beat that original Tron.
How old is that?
82, oh, yeah. I think. Okay. And it's one of the first movies with like computer generated effects. And so it looks really, really dated. And so It was revolutionary when it came out, but nowadays it's like you look at it, it's like so aged.
It pulls you out so much throughout the movie.
Yeah,
because it's laughable at some parts.
Yeah, but the new, from what I understand, the new one, I haven't actually watched it, but I've heard it's very good.
The special effects are good. It has a cult following, kind of like Blade Runner.
Yeah.
So, but no.
No Daft Punk soundtrack in this movie, though.
No.
That would have been awesome. Maybe it would have.
They came back just for this movie.
One Republic did a song. So there was, they used Danger Zone. I liked it. It was cool how they like correlated the movie with specific things in the original.
Uh-huh.
Like that first scene is like exactly the same almost.
Mm-hmm.
With Danger Zone, the planes landing
on the boat,
on the deck. And then there was other things like they referenced the breaking the floor. What's it called? I said it at the start, the deck.
Yeah. You can't fly below so many.
The hard deck. Feet. Yeah. They referenced the hard deck again in a sequence.
But that was more for fun and safety in the training.
Yeah.
Remember,
yeah, but I'm just saying
they did
it in both movies. So okay. It's like a callback, essentially.
Yeah.
So they were good at calling back to the original.
The volleyball,
right?
Scene in both movies.
Yeah.
Yep.
They changed it to two-hand touch football in this one, right?
Yep.
But it was...
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But it was awesome. Like, it was a moment that you were like, oh, this is cool. Like, yep. Just like the volleyball scene probably
was. And Tom's
was.
Just watching them with his AV.
Yeah. Tom, it's funny. Like, I thought Tom looked kind of like a little... weird because he's older and he's a little flabbier, but then I watched him in the original Top Gun and I was like, he kind of looks the same. Like,
well, of course
he looks a little bit younger, but his body,
plastic surgery, I'm just joking.
His body style is like pretty similar.
He reminded me of Michael Scott in season 9 of The Office when he comes back and he's watching the kids and he says, it's like, what does he say? He's like, it's like my kids all grew up and married each other. It reminded me of that when he was sitting on the beach. Just that feeling of the old guy coming back and being proud of his kids, but he's also like awkward himself.
Yeah. And I also think...
Hey, great Office reference. Anytime you do an Office reference for a 43-year-old man, that's great.
Yeah.
All the 43-year-olds I know watch The Office.
Right.
And there were some like motorcycle scenes, because I watched opening weekend, so it's been a little while.
Yeah.
But like Top Gun original, a lot of motorcycle scenes where he's just taking off, you know, kind of this mysterious person figuring out who he is, what he's doing. And they kind of did some of that in this past one as well.
The motorcycle stuff was really good.
Yeah.
I think the standout, the absolute standout out of both of these movies was the plane scenes when they were just flying and it was just them and how loud it was. And then when it would show, not when it's showing their faces like in Star Wars, you know, but like when it actually, when the planes are flying by and like one of them goes through a waterfall in one of the scenes. And like there's another scene where they're like, he like goes above him and does like what, an inversion on top of him. Like I liked all those scenes, and Goose takes a picture.
Yeah.
So, or Polaroid.
Yeah, it's crazy stuff. Stuff you'd never be able to see otherwise.
Stuff that might not be possible.
Yeah.
But it's fun in this movie.
Yeah.
And I think like even that scene where at the beginning of Maverick, where Tom Cruise flies over the guy who's coming to shut the program down, and like the roof comes off that building. Like that was a shot that they took. I looked this up. They could only do the shot once because it destroyed the set as it went by because they didn't expect it to be that powerful. So they got the perfect shot on the first shot, and I thought that was cool, and I thought it turned out perfect. So that was my favorite shot of both movies. But just the fact that they used real planes and stuff like
that. And real people. Like Tom Cruise was in some of those planes.
He learned how to fly because of this movie, I think. Like he's big into flying.
Not those. I don't know if he flies those, but he does have a pilot license.
Yeah, he does.
Like, he was actually up in some of those planes.
When they filmed it.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And he's serious about it. Like he's like, I want to withstand the pressure and like we're going to make this as realistic as possible.
Did he do, what is it, 10 Mach 10? In real life,
I don't think he did Mach 10. I don't. That's probably not.
Is that real? Let me look up if that's a real.
Is this even possible?
Yeah, probably not. I would guess, but one of the other good things about the new movie that I want to point out before I forget is that I think the fact that they centered the movie around the mission, like the mission felt shoehorned into the first movie. Do you agree? Like it came up randomly at the end. It was important to the movie.
Like graduation day, all of a sudden,
you
can only take two in a backup, and Maverick, even though you just came here 30 minutes ago, you're the backup. Yeah.
And whereas in this movie,
you didn't have a lot of good plots back in the 80s. Like, please grade on a curve.
It's like Rocky.
I know. I'm just saying, it's good they recognized that and improved upon it.
It's like Rocky, fight this Russian guy.
Yeah.
Okay, Rocky's a great movie, though. Rocky's a fantastic plots, movie. Though. But you're right. The plot is probably not.
All the plots were fight these Russian guys.
But there were good plot movies. Raging Bull. Okay, Raging Bull is not a good example either.
No. No, okay, I looked it up. So people can only withstand 9G for up to 2 seconds. And let alone they would die at 6G for more than a couple minutes.
Not if you're Tom Cruise.
But nobody has ever gone 10G, and 9G is only for the best pilots, only for a few seconds.
Well, that's the pressure, though. That's actually not the mock. This is mock 10.
Yeah, but as a person who probably, I'm not saying I am, I'm saying someone watching this who has done like a 9G for 2 seconds before is like, this movie's stupid.
Yeah, they are. I mean, pilots have to think this is dumb, but I'm sure they still like it because it makes them look cool.
Yeah, or they can go around being like, I've done 10G, you know? But someone will get the 10G. You just create some pressure-resistant suits, however you do that. I have no idea how you do that.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think the lesson from this is, if you're going to do a movie and you're going to remake it, go look at the old movie, find the parts that people liked about it, and emphasize those parts, and then downplay the parts that you realize haven't aged as well or don't work as well in the original film.
And I think the sun thing was good too. That aspect the was sad. Just between the tension between Miles Teller and Tom Cruise, I thought they did well together. I wish that they had a little bit more time to like argue inside of a room, just them.
Yeah.
Because a lot of it was like covered by plot and stuff, where they only got to interact a few times throughout the movie.
Right.
But by the end, you're satisfied with the conclusion of they're getting along, and he forgives him for pulling his papers from the academy.
And again, some of the side characters are not really, they were underutilized in some senses. In this, like they could have maybe done a few cooler things, but I think it was okay that they focused on the characters they focused on and didn't go too much into the side characters. It's just, there was a lot of characters that was like they introduce and then they don't really do a ton with, but that's kind of, we're nitpicking at this point if we're talking about that.
True.
Mach 10 would be 7,200 miles per hour.
Holy cow. Holy moly.
So our weapon systems can obviously go that fast, but nothing, no human can.
Yes. So. And that's the thing. This is the, this might be the last great pilot movie.
Do you think Shaq could do it?
Probably not.
It has to be someone really
interesting
really
basketball big. Reference to plane movies. The movie Airplane, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar going to be in the cockpit of that movie. Do you remember? Have you seen Airplane?
I've seen that. My dad liked those movies.
Yeah, that's another movie that might not translate as well to our generation, but...
Is it black and white?
No, it's just the type of humor... In the movie, it's like very dry.
How long do you think color? Well,
we watched Raging Bull, and it was made in 1980, and it was black and white.
They did,
but that was a stylistic choice.
Decision, yeah. Which is who directed that again?
Martin Scorsese.
That's right. I don't know how I forgot that. But no, that's true. I think the lesson I learned from this movie is not just how to make a sequel. I think making a sequel is good, but I think finding a way to continue a series that isn't. I guess, which is making a sequel, but it's not just the act of making a sequel. Like, it could be any movie, trying to find the things that work and the things that don't. I think that's an important lesson for all movies. Not that I would ever be in that position.
Absolutely.
And knowing your audience.
Yeah.
If your audience loved the first one, don't mess up what you know is already, like, working. Don't try something different. Like, you know,
right.
People want the planes. People want Tom Cruise. Know your audience.
Well, people knew they obviously knew their audience. If Tom Cruise is the one that's like out of the loop with the kids in this movie, then obviously their target audience is 40-year-old guys.
And they nailed it.
They nailed it. You're right. This is an absolute, you know, great example of, we have this audience. Had A24 made this movie, this would be a disaster.
Oh no.
But they didn't.
It would be two characters in a plane stuck in space.
Yeah. And it would be about it would be like they wouldn't talk to each other. It'd be like all visual.
It would be texting.
Yeah. They couldn't talk. It's like they're silent.
No, they're deaf.
Or it would have been like Everything Everywhere All at Once, where it'd been so overwhelming that like the older generation would just be like, I can't handle this.
No, a guy goes to space in a plane, meets an alien, and they have to get along.
Yeah.
That's the A24.
Top Gun 2, A24.
Yeah. But no, I think there are a few lessons to learn from it, but I think the best part of the movie, and I said this three times, was just the planes in general.
Yeah.
I don't think any other movie's done planes quite like this. Maybe they have and I just haven't seen it. But kind of like when I think of like Whiplash does like good drama, I think of like this does good planes, or like there's always those movies that are really good at one thing. Like specifically,
right.
Like, well, yeah. I don't know. Like, Pixar is really good at animation, but sometimes their stories aren't the best. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, Pixar is also really good at making movies about family, I would say. Yeah. So that would be like if you think about what a lot of Pixar movies are actually about. Like, the animation is really good, but what really puts it over the top is their emphasis on exploring family at in different angles, in different ways. And that you can say the same about this movie. This could have just been any other good action movie, right? But the planes are so unique that they just push it over the top for everyone.
Yep. Well, that's all I have on this movie. I didn't take much notes. I did want to say, was it familiar territory, though, in the second one? Was that a good thing or bad thing?
I think it was a good thing for this movie, that it's familiar.
Dan? I think you were going to say it's a good thing, right?
Yeah. Is this like a little code you guys have for each other? Or is it like it was good because people knew the 86 reference coming into this?
Oh, I mean, like, what did them doing the same themes in the second movie as the first one, was that a good thing?
Oh, absolutely. I've said that a couple times already. Yeah, know your audience. Know what they like. Stay with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then new characters, Miles Teller, Jennifer Connelly?
She's new, yeah.
And then John Hamm as the commander.
Right.
The admiral.
And then that one guy who's the sort of the Iceman character. Not Bob. He's the rival to Rooster.
The jerk. He was kind of a jerk.
Yeah.
Iceman wasn't as much.
I thought maybe, yeah, he was more, they played up the being a jerk more than Iceman. And Iceman, I think, was a little bit cooler. Did you know that that guy, I forget what his name is, but he was in the running to be Rooster, actually. Miles Teller beat him out to it. Glenn Powell.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting factoid that I
Queens. Not that that matters to anyone at all.
But I think
you guys just sit around and watch movies all the time. Like, you keep giving references to all these movies.
Ben and I have been doing this for 2 years now.
Yeah. We try to, you know, keep track of different things in order to be maintain.
It's a lot of movies.
Yeah. Maintain what we know about the industry. But yeah, maybe when we have real jobs like you, we won't have as much time.
I'm not saying I have a real job.
No, but I think Miles Teller did great. I think he looks like Goose enough.
Yes.
Especially with the mustache to play the part well. I think he looks more like him than Glenn. Was it Glenn Powell?
Yeah.
And I think John Hamm did a good job for what he does. I think John Hamm isn't used to these kind of serious roles as much. John Hamm's in, isn't he? He's in a lot of other roles.
He was in Baby Driver, I remember.
Yeah, he's in a ton of things. Jennifer Connelly did a good job. For the few scenes that she was in. So I think the new characters didn't make it
back. How'd you like the daughter-mom relationship in this movie? Could you have take it or leave it?
I could leave it because I forgot about it until you just brought it up.
Okay.
So I don't...
I thought it was an interesting wrinkle. Like, that's another part. When I'm saying the love story is more, like, for the age range, like, so you have a divorced mom and her daughter, single mom raising her daughter, and you have this guy who's been in a bunch of relationships that didn't work out, and he's single, like, and they were in a relationship for a time, and then they weren't. Like, that's more what, maybe not a positive thing, but it's more realistic for more 40-year-olds than if they would have emphasized, like, Rooster being in a relationship, for example, it wouldn't have resonated as much.
But those are the points in the movie where you're focusing in on your popcorn, you're focusing on your Sour Patch Kid.
That's true. When I went to the bathroom in the second movie, it was during, like,
that's when
those
you
want to
go. When they the planes are out, you set everything else down and you're focused.
They know that the 40-year-olds can't hold their bladder as long. they do some studies and they're like, oh, okay, at the 42-minute mark, this is where we need to put this love scene. This is where the father.
We're not that old. Maybe the older people, but 40s isn't that
this
old.
This is where they defecate themselves if we don't put the love stories in. But no,
come on, Ben, you ain't working on 43-year-old people.
I think we keep separating the 40-year-olds from the young generation. But I think this movie was for both. I think the 40-year-olds can relate to it, but I think this movie was for me as well as a non-40-year-old.
This is absolutely one of the thing that made this movie successful was that they were able to hit the magic. This movie reaches all audiences.
And now it's the highest grossing film of Tom's career.
I went with people who were in their 70s, in their 40s, in their teens, and everyone liked it equally. Yep. That's a unique
I think it brought you
angle.
Guys along. You guys seen the 86 didn't matter, but this movie, you see it, you brought along, you enjoy what they did, and we were already fans, still liked it, so old fans, new fans.
Yeah.
1.3 or 4 billion.
1.47.
I think a lot of that's because people watch it so much.
It's chump change for me.
They kept going back and going back to this movie. Like, other movies probably didn't do as well because they would come out and this movie would still be, like, topping the box office.
Yeah. Well, Ben and I, as you guys
other
know...
Other than Minions. Minions was the only other
Minions
one that
was
really...
a meme. That's
that was because it was a meme. But
the thing is, like, Ben and I, if you've listened to the last maybe five or six episodes, I've been very disappointed by 2022's movies besides Everything Everywhere All at Once. But I don't think I was disappointed by this movie because I think it was exactly what I expected. I think people hyped it up and it delivered, you know, especially since I watched the first one first and then the second one second. I don't know what your take would be, Ben, but I think it is the highest grossing film of 2022. And I think, you know, I guess I'm not surprised, not because I think it should be necessarily. I think it can be.
Yeah, I honestly think it deserves to be. Everything Everywhere All at Once is a niche film. Not everyone's going to like that.
Not everyone at all. I think most people.
A lot of people would hate it, yeah, to be honest. But it related with us.
Hated what?
It's called Everything Everywhere All at Once. It's like an art film.
But it's a real movie?
Yeah, it's about a multiverse. Oh,
it's crazy. Interesting. It's wild, but
that's what Jake Hoyer and I went to see him.
It'd be a little bit too wild for a lot of people. But I think this movie will win an Academy Award for something.
You think?
It won't be really? It won't be best movie, it won't be best actor, but I think somewhere in some of the production stuff, like editing or I don't know, maybe not soundtrack, but I feel like there's some category that, like,
you just got to throw them a bone and give them an award.
No. I think they deserve it. In terms of some way. Because think about how impressive it is, some of the film technique that they used in this movie.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
I think the plain stuff, whatever that would be categorized.
Yeah, like. I don't know what the category is. Maybe special effects?
That's not. But is it practical, right?
Yeah, but.
Do you call that
special? I don't know. That's the part of the Oscars I don't understand as much.
What happens behind the door?
I think that that unfortunately for this movie, the Oscars has become a little bit too art movie centric to be. At some point, there was a shift where the Academy focused less on movies that grossed a lot of money. Like, imagine Forrest Gump winning in 1994. Or there was just a period of time where those movies coincided. Like, there was still sort of an artistic bend to some. I mean that in, like, a critical sense. Like, movies that appealed to critics. In the writing sense, that were a little bit more technical and less action centered.
Yeah.
Like, coincided more. Now it's like there's art films and there's these commercial films and they don't really collide as much.
No, you're exactly right. There's such a gap between them now.
Has there been a Forrest Gump 2?
No.
No.
I would pay to see that.
Tom Hanks as old Forrest Gump. Like the little kid
grows up, Forrest's little son.
Actually, I think that could be good, and they could base some of their things on this movie as terms of, and it was set up well,
yeah,
in the other movie to
and
do go it.
Through his life, the little kid's life, and yeah, he's a track star, and yeah, I'd like to see it.
Or he's
yeah.
not good at it. And
how about that? Would be an interesting thing to end, an interesting bit to end. What other 80s movies would you like, if you could take a couple other 80s movies and turn them into, and be promised that the sequel is going to be as good as this sequel was, what movies would you do? And they can be movies that already got sequels,
okay,
too.
Okay, so this is a movie that I watched more than any movie in the late 80s, early 90s. Probably not the greatest of movies, but I remember watching it multiple times in the same day. And when the sequel came out, it wasn't as good. But you guys ever heard of Wayne's World?
Yeah.
That was one of my favorite movies for a long time.
What was the Queen song that got famous because of it? Wasn't there a song in the movie?
I don't know. I haven't seen Wayne's World.
Well, I think that song was already famous. The Bohemian Rhapsody?
Oh, no, yeah. That's what I meant. It might have
re-energized the song.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, I think comedy? Yeah, isn't it Mike?
You've never seen Wayne's World?
No, it's not Mike. But
Wayne's World Party.
Yeah, it's from SNL.
It was an SNL clip.
It originally started as SNL, it became a movie.
That's right.
Zach, why don't you stay the night here tonight? We'll watch the Wayne's World.
Yeah, that I think that would be that's a good example of a movie.
And honestly, it may not be a good movie, so I don't want to promote.
Well, movie. I'm saying that you're promised a good movie. Okay, I see what you're saying.
It's what a young Scott liked.
It was a young Scott, which
pre-pastor Scott.
Definitely.
Pubescent Scott and young teenage Scott. Yes.
All right, let me ask you this. First or second movie, which one did you guys like better?
Second.
Yeah. I'm going to say second is the greatest sequel of all time, but first was better.
I think it's the thing, the factoring point is the nostalgia. Generation. And the generation. Yeah. I can understand that.
When you said I didn't feel, I'll be your wingman any day. I knew this was going downhill.
Hopefully we redeemed ourselves a little
like
bit by praising the second
one.
One
day and like you're going through a tough time and I see you and I come up to you and say, I'll be your wingman any day. Like you should feel the love and understand it. But you just, you'll never get it.
Then I'll be like, what?
Huh?
Wingman? No, you won't. No, just kidding.
No, you won't.
Maybe our generation's too cynical.
Any day. Are you sure? Like we would take it literally.
Yeah.
Zach, I'll be your wingman any day.
What?
I'll come help you in the hospital or wherever you need.
Sure.
Yeah. All right.
We need a heart transplant.
So usually how we close the movie vault is we have the guest or one of us close the vault because, you know, we're in the vault, Zach and I.
Yeah.
And you came in.
Oh, I got to go?
But now you're leaving, but you're closing the door behind you. So any sound effect that you want to make in order to signify
like
that the vault
slamming of the door?
It could be slamming. But some people have done like very obscure noises, just
I wish
anything.
You guys would have given me a heads up on this. I could have thought
you could have thought of something.
I got nothing.
I could add a suggestion.
Please.
Some sort of airplane noise to close the vault.
An airplane shutting the vault?
Well, don't think about it too literally, okay? Like, it's already a figurative thing that we have a vault to begin with, so.
I've got no sound effects, so I'm
no sound effects. Okay, maybe I'll do it then. Okay.
Yeah.